Welcome to the Kayak Mainline Podcast. David's no officer, and I'm certainly no gentleman. And folks, you've got nowhere else to go. All right, welcome to another edition of Kayak Mainline, the podcast for the kayaker within you and without you. As always, I am joined with the beautiful and talented David Johnston from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
And I'm here with Kelly Blades, the virtual kayaking encyclopedia.
Virtual?
Well, virtual as in it's in your head.
Oh, I thought you meant like online.
Oh, yeah. I was more thinking like you didn't have a whole book of your own kayak encyclopedias.
The fact is I've forgotten more about kayaking than most people know. The problem is I've really forgotten it, so I'm of no value. But welcome this evening, if it is evening when you're listening to this. We have got a whole just bushel basket full of fun tonight.
Definitely do.
It was a crazy time. It's been a couple of weeks since we've done any recording. We had trips and watery goodness all over. So, yeah, we got a lot to talk about. We got some news stories. David has been scouring the interwebs trying to find
hours of work.
It was crazy, crazy busy at how much is really going on in the kayaking world. We have some things ourselves, and we also sit back, kids, strap in, and be ready for the rumble, because we have an interview tonight with the Body Boat Blade phenoms, Shauna Franklin and Leon Somme.
I'm really excited about it.
It is a good time. It is quite a good time. So here we go. On with what's new. David, what's new?
Oh, so much.
Specifically, I mean, we've got SpaceX flying around. We've got a world in turmoil. But what's new specifically with you? What have you done? How have you squandered your time the last few days?
Sadly, I was at work. But no, but I think since the last time we chatted, I've been to Calgary. So I'm back now. But I was teaching sea kayaking in the great city and province of Calgary, Alberta. And I taught there for 10 days. We put on a bunch of instructor courses, so I was pretty excited about that.
Now, I brought this up prior to you going, and I'm going to bring it up right here in the podcast. Isn't that cowboy country?
It totally is.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see any belt buckles that were larger than your head?
No, but I saw some big hats.
Excellent. Now.
Like 35-gallon hats.
35. Because quite honestly, you know, 10-gallon hats just don't get you over the mountains.
Oh, not now. Yeah.
Nuh-uh. And did you see a lot of trucks with brush guards?
Definitely. But lots of those trucks with those things that hang behind the, how can I say it politely? You know, on the hitch, those little bolly things that people like to hang? Lots of those.
Well, to make it look like their truck has some sort of reproductive organ.
Exactly.
And not the feminine reproductive
organ. Like everybody and their brother has them hanging there.
That's right. Because the female reproductive organ hanging off the back of a truck would be more like Alabama.
Yeah, pretty much.
And very misogynistic and terrible.
Yeah, but it was great out there. It was completely not what I expected at all. It's definitely diehard canoe country and whitewater kayaking country, but there's lots of people do a lot of sea kayaking. There's lots of lakes, and people are buying boats all over the place. So there's just hardly any instructors, so Paddle Canada helped support it. We put on the courses, and I got 9 more people in the ranks.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I always like it when, you know, places that shouldn't have sea kayaking have sea kayaking. That means that the sport is growing enough where, you know, folks who really shouldn't have a clue as to what those long pointy things are, you know, they're doing it.
Yeah. Oh, totally. So what'd we do? So we did a bunch of courses, and then we spent one morning. But definitely the highlight for me, we spent a morning on the Kananaskis River, which is just out of Calgary, and we did some moving water. Pretty small, like class one, starting to get to class two, but we were in the longboats, and we were coming down, clearing out eddies of little whitewater boaters, and they were running for the hills.
Good.
Yeah.
Those whitewater trash.
Well, there was a course going on at the time where they said, what are you guys doing? And because I was down doing a little safety boat at the bottom, you know, picking up the pieces. And so I told them we were doing it, and they were just in shock. And then they said, we're going to take our class farther down the river. I was like, see ya.
Excellent. They were a little afraid.
Yeah. So successful. How about yourself? What have you been up to?
Well, I had a couple of good weekends here. Like you said, it's been a while since we've talked. So I've done, since we have spoken, I got about 32 miles on the Huron.
Okay.
I got this little plan. It's not an expedition necessarily, but there's a river that runs through it, and by it, I mean Lower Michigan. The Huron, back in the day, it was one of the major thoroughfares for the Native American trading route and the French fur traders. And you can do about 120 miles on this. And what I'd like to do is a little, like, micro expedition, but not really an expedition, because obviously this water has paddled quite a bit. But what I'm trying to do is show people that this stuff can be done. You can do something as cool as 120 miles on this river, and never spend a night out in a tent if you don't want to. You can do these miles. You can have a lot of fun with it, and you can do it in a sensible time frame. So my plan is to get it all done. excuse me, to get it all done within the year, just when I have some free time and friends to go paddling with. And
the whole series of day trips are kind of overnights.
Right. So I'm averaging about, you know, 16 mile after work. I'll hop in the sea boat and I'll go down, and see a new section. And it doesn't have to be consecutive for me. Obviously, anyone can do it the way they want to do it.
So what's the river like?
It's more of a moat at that point.
Right.
But I found a section in there that I'd never paddled before. And it was God out of time, really. You know, it was this little spot where you'd think there would be just industry.
Okay.
Along the river. But in fact, it was high banked. It was very funny because we're paddling along and it's like I said, it's in the middle of nowhere, even though it's in the middle of somewhere. And we pass by, we're coming around this curve and we see, wow, I'm going to have to be delicate with this. We see a man and a woman engaging in some sort of act underneath the bridge.
Oh no. And did you have to put your blinders on?
Well, you know, we were at a good enough distance where we really didn't see anything.
Right.
However, you know, we went and it was pretty obvious that they were up to some sort of shenanigans.
Mm.
But the story doesn't stop there. So the lady looks over at us and sees us coming, and so whatever they were doing, they put a halt to pretty quickly.
Right.
So we're paddling along and they're in little like Kiwi style boats, you know, like little teeny tiny pungo, but they were older, so they're probably Kiwis. And they turn around and they see fellow kayakers and they wave, and it turns out they're lit like a Christmas tree. You are drunk. And so to top it all off, of course, what would you expect the guy should be wearing if he's in a Kiwi drunk trying to get a little friendship on the river? He's wearing a captain's hat.
That's awesome.
That's right. If I can use this theater of the mind for a moment, he had a little captain's hat on. And they waved and we waved and paddled at our 5 knots as quickly as we could away from the situation.
That's fantastic. That reminds me, I remember one time when years ago I was guiding a canoe trip. I used to work at camp for years, and I remember once guiding a whole gang of 12 or 13-year-old boys that were cruising through Algonquin Park. And all of a sudden a couple come around the corner in a canoe, and I was at the front of the group, and I realized she's topless.
Nice.
And I was, you know, all these boys, so I thought, I'm not saying a thing. I'm just going to watch and see what happens. And so everybody's paddling along, and everybody's kind of slouched, you know, as they're canoeing. And they're all staring at the water, and it's like, you watch the group all of a sudden, like, one by one, like little gophers coming out of the ground, like, whoop, whoop. Everybody's, like, staring, and they're all looking around, like, what's happening? This is heaven. And everybody's like, she had no top on. And, you know, everybody's very awkward about the whole thing. But, yeah, it was pretty great.
And that woman later on turned out to be Margaret Thatcher. What a great story. So, yes, I love that. I love toplessness on the river. I think that's fantastic. I'm not prepared to do it because I'm kind of chubby. But I highly recommend
policy against it. So
if you got the goods, you might as well show them. You know, that's what I say personally, you know, American style. And then this last weekend, I went up to Marquette, Michigan.
Okay.
And to Houghton, Michigan, to Downwind Sports to show my P&H wares, which was quite a good time. Now, you've been up to the UP.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who don't know about Michigan, the UP is called, we call the UP, or the Upper Peninsula, the UP.
And what are people buying?
Cetuses.
Are they?
Oh my word, they can't get enough of the Cetuses. We don't have, for those of you who have not listened to the first episode or don't know who I am much, I work for P&H Kayaks. And we have a boat called the Cetus, and that Cetus, there are very few that are actually for sale in shops. And there are none that we have them. We don't even have them in this country before they're already sold.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah, they. I can bet we have sold 50 in the last month and a half. And we're talking glass and Kevlar.
Really?
Yeah.
And what are people buying? Like the regular high volume or low volume, or just kind of a smattering?
Oh, this is a funny little bit. So to answer your question, they're buying low volumes and mid volumes.
Okay.
Those are truly where that's the money shot right there for them.
Right.
However, bigger guys like myself and even, Ben Lowry paddles in HV high volume because it's not that big.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Day paddles in HV. And I finally got a demo boat of an HV.
Okay.
Picked it up. It was still in plastic. And I took it to Marquette. Nobody came in that big wanting to try it, so it stayed in plastic. The next day, I go to Houghton, which is also a fantastic city. So, but I bring this boat out, and it's still in its wrapping. I haven't even looked at my demo yet. But, I put the boats out on the beach. A gentleman comes up, who I spoke with a year prior, and he looks over and says, "Hey, is that the HV? And I said, "Yeah, it's my new demo boat. You want to give it a try?" He's like, "Ah, no, don't unwrap it just for me." I said, "No, it's my demo boat. That's what I do. I just haven't had a chance." So yeah. I says, "Right." I open the boat up. He hops in and he paddles around. He comes back and he says, "I'll take it."
Oh. So well, I guess that's good, but yeah.
But I didn't even have my HV demo out of the wrapping before somebody, put their butt in it and bought it.
Well, it's a great boat. I mean, and I paddled a low volume here, Cetus, and it's a nice boat.
Yeah, he'll be happy forever with that boat. It's great, but it was just funny to have. A boat. I was so excited to finally get my HV, and gone.
You got another order in for next year.
Exactly. So, but you had a little bit of fun in a boat
yes.
weekend as well.
Yeah. So just this couple days ago, I was out, and I'll say honestly, so I was out with here in Toronto, right. Doing some surfing. We had,
in fact, while I was at the miserable demo in Marquette,
we were living it up on the waves.
Tell us who we is, because you were out with a friend of ours who needs to be part of this at some point.
Yeah, so I was out with my good friend Eric Ogard here in Toronto, who does a lot of teaching as well. And it was the
Captain Canada.
He's huge. He's just this monster,
and he's built like a superhero.
Oh yeah,
he really is.
Yeah. So we go out paddling. I'm like, "Eric, we got to take a break." He's like, "What for?" And I stare at his arms, and he hasn't even started using them yet.
Right.
So that was Saturday. So Friday, there was a huge windstorm that came through and waves, and tons of rain, closed down our subways, flooded everything. It was really exciting. So we caught the tail end of that Saturday morning, and I'll say I probably had easily my best surf day in five years. Yeah, it was so much fun.
Okay, before you get into what you really want to talk about, and I know this, give us conditions.
I'm trying to think them out without making them up. So it was strong winds, probably 15 knots. It died later, about 1 o'clock, but it rode for a good chunk in the morning.
Now, folks, I can honestly say that he ain't making this crap up, because that storm blew through where I live just a few hours prior, so...
Waves coming in was probably in where we were surfing, probably typical 3 feet, a couple 4-footers coming in. It wasn't massive, like scary big,
but it was good riding.
Yeah, it was really fun. And the best part about it was because the wind died, unlike the ocean where you actually get waves with and you don't have wind. Anytime for us, it's always wind waves. So, good surf day just means you're battling the wind trying to get back out again. So it was great because the wind started to die. And there's another area that we play in called the Western Gap, which is just a split, kind of gets you into the airport, into the Inner Harbor in Toronto. And due to some really poor design on all the retaining walls in there, which is great for us, when waves get washed in, this it just bounces around. It's about a city block big, but so its energy can't escape. So in there, just bouncing waves all over the place. They were consistently 4 to 5 feet. In there? No, it was huge.
And again, for those of you on the East Coast, West Coast, when David's talking about these waves, you guys are probably thinking, 4 to 5 feet, man, that's nothing, dude.
Yeah.
That's like barely ready to ride. we're talking about Great Lakes waves. And when you talk about Great Lakes waves, we're talking about high peaks and really, really steep because they're all windborne. We don't have tides.
Yeah, exactly.
To speak of. So when we talk about 4 to 5 foot waves, it's a horror show.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's game on. Like, as I've said before, and I'll probably say again on this podcast, when you get used to surfing in the West Coast or the East Coast with your cool waves, that's no joke. I get that. But it's, you know, you get out there and it's like a prize fight. You know, you have to kind of time yourself and you have to use a little intelligence and you can really have a good day and you can conquer it. The Great Lakes, when it gets that big, it is a bar fight. Things are coming from everywhere. Chairs are being thrown. People are getting knifed. It is just ugly.
Yeah, those tables flipping all over the place.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was really good. And so I got to try out one of the Aries P&H boats for the first time. So it was a demo here in Toronto. So I got a chance to try that out. And boy, that was that's kind of what really put the great day, just made it awesome.
Well, I love the Aries. I'm a huge fan. So, but tell me your, so this is a solicited opinion, obviously, or like he said, David paddles the Cetus. He's, you know, part of our team, but he's never paddled the Aries. And, one of the things we like to do with our team members is we don't look for the party line. We want to know what people have to say about the boat unsolicited so we can make our changes and so we can make good boats based on experience and things like that rather than just a CAD drawing.
Yeah. I don't gush over boats. Like, I really don't. Like, I paddle boats, and I like them, and, you know, but it was really nice. It was the first time I tried the glass version. It's the glass version of
Delphin.
Right. So, big upswept bow, and really designed for rough water paddling. Break it down. It surfed great. I was really impressed with that. So, get up to speed really fast, especially on short waves, and short waves, like wind waves where it just kept wanting to turn sideways into the trough was nice. So I just kind of dropped down the skag a little bit, kind of keep her in line. But side surfing, boy, that was totally fun. And because it's so much volume in the bow, it would want to bury, but it's fighting against gravity. You know, it's still coming back up again. And you get out of, once you get side surfing, because I'm not used to so much rocker. So you can just control it with like a nice sweep and kind of steer it with your feet. Kind of helped pull it around a little. It was up and over those waves, back on for another ride. Yeah, I was screaming the whole time.
Well, and it's got that flat planing hull right in the midpoint of the bow, between your seat and the bow, which really makes that a loose boat, which I love. But, you know, a lot of people get into it, and I find this myself, is you're paddling on flat water, and you stop paddling for a second, and she'll turn around, turn on you like an angry divorce.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
It'll go right around on you. But when you paddle it, when you put some forward energy into it, it dives that bow in just a little bit and creates a longer water line.
Nice. Well, I definitely had no problem keeping up with Eric, who was, you know, he's huge to start with, but he was paddling a Cetus high volume at the time, which he was staring at, trying to recalculate his monthly budget to figure out how to pay for it. He was like, what do you think? I was like, I don't know. But
now, did he get in the Aries?
Yeah, he got out and he was playing around in it. He had a good time. In his case, he was sinking it a bit too much. Like, he's just over the weight threshold for it.
Right.
He liked it, but he needs a high-volume version of that.
Yeah. Now I'm a big guy. Mm-hmm. However, he is gigundous. He's like, what, 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and you could show a movie on his chest. He's just a huge friggin' guy. Now, it's interesting to watch somebody, because I had the opportunity at Door County Sea Kayak Symposium. Very first time I had my Aries out, I let Darren Bush, the owner of Rutabaga, paddle it.
Okay.
And we had some good winds. I bet it was probably 15 to 20. It always blows pretty well out there. And, you know, good little surf. And he was out there surfing and playing. And he was styling it, but like you would expect. Like you said, it's a surf machine. So, you know, no surprise there. But when I saw him heel that around and paddle upwind, I'd never seen it from that perspective before. And that boat is super fast going into the wind.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that surprised me. Do you want to talk about news?
I would always like to talk about news, David.
It's time for the Kayak Mainline News. Yes, your source for news all over the world, down the street or just outside your door.
What sort of news did you pull out of the archives in your vast searching of news?
Well, there's, let's see. So I found four stories.
Okay.
And they're wide selection of different topics today. So first one, let's talk about surfing and dedicated surfers. Like, I don't think there's really any sport where people are more dedicated than surfers. So there's a 13-year-old girl just this week, Dana Point, and she had a goal this time last year to surf every single day for a year, 365 consecutive surf days. Wow. That she was out. And so she made a deal with her mother. So she's completed this record, and it kind of made the news, you know, a 13-year-old girl. And but her mother said, you can't miss any school.
Okay.
So so that was part of the deal. So they were out every morning surfing at 6:30.
That's
and dropped her off at school for 8:30.
Yeah, that's so many questions come up on that for me. Like, well, not questions, just sort of commentary. First of all, good for you, Miss Point, for paddling an entire year. And I can say unequivocally, at 13 years old, I don't think I wanted to do anything for an entire week.
No, I was like, give me half an hour of this and I'm done.
Right. I was like, I would read a comic book and then, you know, go outside and play.
Right.
Or, you know, try to get my television to work or whatever I had, you know, back then.
Right.
But 365 days of paddling, and then, you know, good for her parents for realizing that, you know, this is a good exercise and she's truly digging it. And she got a goal, and so many parents, you and I are both parents, so many parents don't want to change what they do. I mean, really change what they do. That's a pretty big hump right there, the taking her out at 6:30 in the morning before school.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool story. She was either surfing with her mom or her dad, you know, because you can't just sit on shore. So they were actually out surfing with her.
That's brilliant. So now that's a fantastic record. I wonder – you know, my own brain wonders what is the record?
So, I thought the same thing earlier a couple days ago. So when I was putting this together, I thought, well, who's got the most? So Dale Webster, and he's in Valley Forge, California, and he currently has the record of 10,407 consecutive days.
That's by my calculations, as I look at the screen, that's roughly 28 years, if I'm guessing right.
Yeah, so he started September. It's now been a couple of years since this whole thing finished. But so that was September 2, 1975, to February 29th, 2004. And so his threshold that he has, so he set it up so he had to catch three waves before he would be done.
28 years.
Yeah.
28 years this guy did that.
There's a whole page on Wikipedia about it. It's pretty funny.
Dan Webster.
Yeah, but the best part about it is on the Wikipedia page, it talks about why he started doing this.
Uh-huh.
His goal was to do a full year, and it's basically it says here, so according to Dale, he did it for a number of reasons. His wetsuit was damaged, and he wanted to surf for a full year to force the manufacturer into replacing it. In brackets, it's got incorrectly interpreting the warranty. And that he attempted to beat what he thought was the record for the most consecutive days surfed, 5,280, but was actually the record in feet for the longest distance surfed ashore.
Nice. Oh, I love that.
So in both cases, his motivation,
was greed and stupidity.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just call it like it is. It's greed and stupidity. Yeah. And then he goes in the record books for 10. Okay, so the next question. All right, so clearly this guy's motivated by greed and stupidity. But he's doing what he loves, and so that's cool. So let's say it's day 10,408.
Yeah.
And you wake up in the morning and you go, I'm good.
Well, that's exactly. So
That's like Forrest Gump when he's running across the country like four or five times and he just stops and goes, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Apparently he did it through where he had like medical and he had to have surgery and everything. So he just kind of scheduled surgery around it. So he'd go surfing in the morning so that he would, you know, be able to do it. He had kidney stones and car breaks down. He got bit by a shark a couple times.
A couple of times.
Sharks. Yeah.
A couple of times.
Yeah.
Not just once.
At one point, he battled off a great white.
He battled off a great white to keep the record going. All over a friggin' wetsuit. And a misinterpretation.
That's the best part of the whole thing.
Ah! That's awesome. So thank you for those stories. That's great. You got anything else?
Yeah, what do we got? We're switching to whitewater kayaking.
We are.
Bam Margera?
Bam Margera. Jackass. Bam. Bam.
From Jackass. Yeah, anyways, he got injured.
Just no. This tell week. Me. Tell me. A so, Jackass guy got injured? What?
Yeah, shocking. There's not a ton of detail. I was trying to find out some info, but apparently he decided to go down a 100-foot kayak waterfall going in a double, what I think was a Jackson, one of the Jackson double kayak boats,
okay.
And the with pro kayaker Steve Fisher as his guide.
Wow.
So he goes over the waterfall, something happens, and next thing we know, he tweets out a note that says he had just survived a hernia operation due to a 100-foot kayak drop. You can't make it on the show tonight.
I kind of believe that, you know, it's Bam. So probably what really happened is just before they went down, he asked Steve Fisher to kick him in the groin 3 times. I mean, that's usually the MO. Or maybe
right.
He was in a giant bunny suit or something like that. Or Johnny Knoxville was shooting paintballs at him as they went over. I have no idea.
Probably something like that.
But okay, so you're Steve Fisher, all right?
Yeah.
And Bam shows up off the show Jackass and says, hey, I want you to try something with me.
Right.
Categorically, you say no.
Okay.
I think, personally, I mean, have you seen much Jackass?
Just a little bit.
Okay.
You know, it's too highbrow for me.
Yes. You'd rather watch Ouch My Balls, which is a little bit better. Yeah, I don't even know how to feel about that. I mean, it's totally plausible.
Yeah.
I could see
why. Apparently they're good friends.
Okay, well, cool. Good for Steve, then, you know? I mean...
But, the part of it is I'm trying to figure out. So it was somewhere in Oregon, and I was looking to try to find more info in some of the kayak forums, and I couldn't find anything. Maybe I'm just not good with the Google. But so he gets injured, but there's no word about Steve Fisher, whether he got injured, or really what happened. Who knows? It could have all happened when he got to shore and realized, this doesn't look good on camera. Give me a good swift kick in the back or something. Who knows?
In the back. I'm glad you avoided the groin. That's
well,
usually where they get it. Yeah.
Would you ever do a 100-foot waterfall?
God, let me not on a bet. No, I don't think I would. I've done waterfalls. Yeah,
okay.
For fun. But you know, at some point, you're not doing the waterfall. You're just sort of plummeting for a while.
What's it like hitting the bottom at? Like, how high would you have done? Like 15 feet?
Yeah, 15-20 feet. You know, it depends on water level and things like that. But usually, you know, not anything high.
Okay.
You know, to non-whitewater kayakers, it sounds really, really sweet. But to dudes who whitewater kayak, I'm a sissy.
Right.
But yeah, you know, let's say 15-foot waterfall. You do that, and it's really cool because you don't see – the first time you run it, you don't really see the bottom unless you've scouted. But from your perspective in the boat, you don't know what's going on down there. So you just kind of – fall off the edge, and at 15-20 feet, you're really at the bottom before you know what's going on. But
okay.
Definitely, there's like only a momentary free fall feeling,
right?
And it's probably pareidolia because you know you're falling off of something. But you land, and you got to hit right. So if you hit too steep, if you hit with your nose going straight down, what'll happen is you'll submerge, and then the boat will pop up and either flip you over. Like, you know, almost do a loop with you. But usually what happens is you'll hit and it'll throw you back into the waterfall. And then you're in a recycler and, you know, you're kind of getting beat up pretty bad until it's really, really crappy. I've been underneath a waterfall when I didn't intend to be, and it's no fun.
Just pounding on the
top
on the hull of the boat.
Yeah, you're looking for the Wicked Witch of the West because you are in a twister. So, yeah, or you land flat, and if you land flat, then you're basically doing a belly flop with your butt.
Right.
And you can, that's when the real damage, you know, from just landing properly, that's when the real damage comes, because you can compress your spine and do all kinds of crazy stuff. And
but in his case, like here, Bams, he got a hernia injury out of this whole thing, and I'm trying to figure out, like, how and why, like, it must have just, I don't know enough about. I'm certainly not a doctor, and I don't even play one on TV.
Right. Well, it probably torqued him forward when if he landed,
if
he stuck it, he probably landed, torqued him forward, and, you know, tore some abdominal muscles.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I mean, I know.
Because there's a photo, and he's in the front. Because certainly Steve Fisher's guiding it down.
Right, right.
As it goes over. But, you know, there's no video footage, and there's only really been one photo that I've been able to find. So I don't even know whether there's a camera shoot there. Like, if they were even – they might have just been out paddling.
Yeah.
Who knows?
There you go.
All right, let's move on.
Okay.
What
else you got?
What we got here?
One more?
Let's move to fishing. Yeah, one more.
Fishing. You know, my favorite, fishing. I love fishing.
Yeah, here's the headline. Saskatchewan, this is Canada, Saskatchewan fisherman reels in more than a big one, catches a homemade bomb.
A homemade bomb?
Yeah. As soon as I, you know, hear about fishing and catching a bomb, I thought, this is going in the list.
Where was he fishing? Gilligan's Island?
I don't know, but he reeled in the big one.
Because they had an episode of Gilligan's Island where they pulled up a mine from World War II.
Oh, yes, right.
Uh-huh.
He was in a water reservoir just south of Saskatoon, and the RCMP put out a press release because they had to bring in the bomb squad. So he's fishing. He pulls in some type of homemade device, and they don't really know what it is, and it's got wires and the whole thing. And somebody goes, I think it could be a bomb.
Hmm.
So they called the police, and the bomb squad came out and defused it on the side of the lake.
Crazy.
Yeah. Sadly, the article says Corporal Rob King would not say how big the bomb was. In my head, it's like, you know, a massive bomb, but it's probably just something small.
He probably picked up a bag of M80s that some kid ditched when the Coast Guard came along.
Yeah.
You know.
So the final thing is police are trying to find out how it got in the reservoir, and I'm, you know, for sure they're going to get that sorted out.
Oh, yeah, because they figure that stuff out all the time. And that's just how it works, because you got all kinds of clues being at the bottom of the water.
But I wonder how good it still would be if it's sitting in water forever.
Yeah.
Forever, how long it was. Dynamite's not too waterproof.
No. As a rule, it's not. I mean, it is for a bit. But I think they know how the bomb got there. Somebody put it in there. I don't think it was a naturally occurring bomb.
It grows in the wild.
Right.
Though I used to have a relative, a grandfather, who used to fish with dynamite all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, the shockwave goes through the water and stuns the fish. They all float to the surface, and you
need them.
It's totally legal to do.
Yeah, why not? Now, for something even better, ladies and gentlemen, we have a lovely interview with Leon Sommet and Shauna Franklin from Bodyboat Blade. Welcome to Kayak Mainline, our second interview. We are here with the lovely and talented Shauna and Leon. I was going to say your last names, but I don't know what they are anymore. I don't know if you know this. Our audience, probably some of them do, but they were recently married.
Yes, that's true. And Kelly, I did keep my last name, Franklin.
Excellent.
Leon kept his last name.
Oh, that's a bad move.
We still own ourselves.
Leon Sommet.
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 And so Sean and Leon are joining us from Santa Barbara, California. Is that right?
A little further north.
A little further north. Okay, Bakersfield.
We live on
a beautiful little island in the Pacific Northwest called Orcas Island.
Oh, I thought you meant Hawaii. Orcas Island.
Orcas Island in the San Juan Island archipelago. I like saying that word, archipelago.
Do you remember how Stan used to say it?
No.
Stan Klotik, famous Stan Klotik. Yeah. Archipelago.
Archipelago.
He would say that. And as always, we are joined with David, my co-host.
Hey.
Wow, hey. The best color man in the business.
I know, eh? Yeah.
David Johnston. So we have Shauna and Leon, and we're very fortunate to have Shauna and Leon here. Shauna and Leon, could you please tell us a little bit about yourselves for the three people who don't know who the heck you are in paddle sports?
Okay. Little known fact, we met in a kayak rowing class at the University of Minnesota as we were both biology students there.
And you're from Minnesota yourself?
Yes.
And Leon is from Louisiana.
Well, born in Louisiana, but I met Sean at the University of Minnesota as well. And we have a little school on Orcas Island called Bodyboat Blade. We've been passionate about this sport and been paddling and coaching for how many years now? About 20 years.
About 20 years, yeah.
And you two are you, you're coach level fives?
No,
not yet.
No,
never.
Never.
No, there's an opportunity for us.
Yeah, we might have missed our opportunity on that one because the new BCU scheme has come into place, and it's a long story, Kelly. We probably wouldn't go into it at this point.
Long and political.
So knowing what I do about the BCU, so what you're saying is you can teach people at coach level five but not a coach level one.
I don't think we can teach on flat protected water.
Right, but everything else is good to go. that's where I'm at with my BCU training at this point. I understand that deal.
Very confused, but yet
right.
very
happy. So for a very long time, though, you were the Wunderkind of the BCU here in North America. You guys were some of the first people to go after your coach level 5.
Well, right, we are on that track yet, but I don't think they're going to be offering a coach level 5, you know, in the future. So we'll continue with the BCU however we can continue.
But what our past is we actually went down the assessor track to become coach educator. So there's the, as you know, Kelly, there's the Star Awards, there's a coaching track, and there's the assessor track. So we worked hard to get the assessor grades.
For whatever that did.
Because we thought we'd do some value in this country. But
yeah.
And how's that different from the Star Awards?
Now we might be the most hated people in the U.S. I don't know.
The Star Awards are just personal. Well,
those are the skill development.
They're the skills development, but now there always was the leadership award and the 5-star. And now there's a leadership award and the 4-star and 5-star. So the skills awards, yeah, are personal development and leadership award.
So they're not offering Coach 5 anymore, or it's too unattainable?
No, it's they just ran their last Coach Level 5 courses, and those people that got on those can go within the next 3 years for it. And it's not that it's unattainable, it's just that they're revamping the whole scheme, and I think I don't think they actually know what they're going to do with the Level 5 at this point, but I don't think they're going to have it be what it was in the past.
Mm.
We can have a long, drawn-out conversation with Steve Maynard at one point.
And we can get diagrams and lots of, you know, bubbles and lines and
right.
map it all out. Possibly not tonight.
Right. And for those of you kids who have never met Steve Maynard, he sounds a bit like this all the time, so it's going to be a fantastic interview.
Yes.
And I love Steve. Don't get me wrong, but that's my best impression of Steve.
That's good. Leon's got a good one of him walking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's quite good.
Steve, that is not true, Steve.
we love Steve, too.
I used to see a lot of bands in London back in the day. Anyway, we digress on Steve. He's a wonderful man, and we all love Steve. And so are you doing ACA stuff now out there?
No, we're not.
You're doing sort of your own gig, right?
Well, no, we're still very involved in the BCU. And we do our own things.
Through Body Boat Blade.
Yeah. Bodyboatblade.com.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you want to email us, info@bodyboatblade.com. And by the way, kids, let me just tell you that they have the most fantastic hoodies on the planet.
Excellent.
Goodness. Oh, I know.
I happen to be wearing mine right now, and it was totally by accident, but I'm very, very honored to have one of these. And I have a T-shirt as well that my daughter has absconded with, so... the kids of Kent Lake Elementary now know who Body Boat Blade are, for what it's worth.
Excellent.
Yes.
So you know you've really made it when, you know, 9, 10, 11-year-old girls are wearing it.
Right on. We're going to start pushing that a little bit more, maybe.
Leon, you are the Justin Bieber of kayaking.
Justin Bieber. His name came up yesterday.
I don't know who that is.
Of course you don't.
This is the first time I've looked at a screen of any kind for many years.
It's very true. So you guys run a myriad of classes out there, though. Tell us a little bit about what you do out in Orcas Island.
We run a lot of different classes. Everything from, I guess, an hour and a half rowing class to 5-day kayak camps. And everything's pretty much... we're a school. That's all we do. We don't do tours or rentals, really. We just are here to help people who want to become independent paddlers and go out on their own.
And we will work with paddlers at any level. So
there you go.
And to a more advanced paddler. So whoever wants to walk through the door and has enthusiasm and wants to learn, we'll try to help them out.
And it's an absolutely beautiful place out there. And one of the things that I think is really cool about what you guys do, and I don't know if this is the case, we haven't talked about this in a while, but at one point you had a very small retail shop, but it was only catering to the stuff that you believed in and you would use in the class. So it was less of a money gosh, how do we put this? It wasn't that you were looking to try to get everybody to buy a kayak. You were just trying to add an added value to the classes that you taught. Is that right?
Yeah, we still have our small retail shop, and we pretty much only carry kind of the equipment we personally know and use, because we know that, and we kind of think that other people that use equipment that know it better can sell that. And it's hard to sell something you don't know very much about, or necessarily believe in. You know, there's a lot of things out there that people have choices about, and some things, you know, people go in directions that are different than other individuals, and, you know, we kind of like the stuff we use and believe in it, so that's what we push.
Awesome. See, I think that's pretty cool. And going to technique here, I do want to touch on this, because I kind of used this as a tease for David earlier about Leon, you and I had a conversation about how you're teaching towing these days.
Rescues.
I'm very sorry about that. Yes.
Rescues. Yeah, yeah. And actually, I'll have to say I give credit to Steve Maynard for first introducing this idea to me, but I've morphed it a little bit. But kind of one of the fastest ways to get people to understand why we teach rescues the way we do is in our area, because we have so much currents and things like that, is to create an artificial current if you're in flat water, and that's to put the rescue under tow. And as long as that's happening, you realize why you want to have deck lines, why you wouldn't go out to the end of the boat and try to push down, things like that.
And then, of course,
we get up to a tow line?
We hook the rescuer up to a tow line, so they're being pulled while they do the rescue on the person that came out of their boat.
Like an anchor tow on the coast or something.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And in on a flat water situation, if that's the area that you're working with, it gives people an opportunity to feel that motion and that current. And like Leon said, it just drives home some of the things that we're teaching within that rescue.
So how fast would you be pulling people? Just a gentle pull?
Yeah, one or two knots.
How fast can a person pull somebody along? You know, they've got about a knot or knot and a half of current against them.
It's enough to, if they let go of a deck line, they'll be swimming without a boat in their hands.
Okay, walk me through this process, because I'm totally hooked by this. Okay. So your student, your swimmer, like the rescuer and the swimmer. So you would just hook on to what, the bow? For them, and just give them a little bit of pressure as they're working along.
Yeah, just get moving, either one or two towers, pulling them along. And then the person being rescued, of course, that's in the water, he's creating a drag. So one of the things we teach people in working in currents and stuff is you want to move that swimmer to your boat, to hang on to your boat, so the rescuer can deal with and manipulate the boat.
Right.
So, and then the other thing about that is that if they move out towards the back of their boat to go push it down, there's a really good chance they're going to lose that person. They move in what we call we have a recapture zone from their cockpit to our boat, where we could always re-catch them again. And then we call it the lose the swimmer zone when they move from their cockpit towards the end of the boat. And it just makes it also impossible to hold the boat in a T if they're moving out in that direction, in that moving water, or in this artificial moving water of being towed.
Right, because it wants to go parallel with the rescue boat.
Exactly.
Okay. So if the T doesn't work because the current's pulling the boat around, like, you know, that kind of textbook T rescue that always ends up happening.
Right.
So do you just skip that whole process?
Well, once the swimmer gets to the rescuer's boat, you can actually push at that current speed. You can push the boat around and get it into a T.
Okay, now I'm with you. Okay,
if the swimmer's on the boat.
Exactly. Oh, okay, because they're just a major anchor. Yeah. Yes. Now I'm fully on board with you.
Yeah, you kind of got to do it, and then we set up all these more as people gain experience and knowledge. We throw in the whole towing aspect of it, and we'll have lines of four towers pulling a rescue while it's going on. And then once the person's in the boat, you hook up the tow, and the the front person that's in the tow line dump releases their tow line and dumps in, and then it becomes the next person being rescued at the end of the line as they move past, and you go through. I don't know if you can understand this verbally, but essentially every person in the group gets to release their tow, be rescued, and be a tower for some portion of it.
So it creates moving current, or the illusion of moving current. I guess that's a sort of a redundant statement. It creates current, and it also creates some energy towards getting the rescue done quickly.
Exactly. And then once we move them into actual moving water, they've had a chance. They understand the importance of hanging on to deck lines, moving to the rescuer's boat, all of those things. And they do much, much better when they get into the actual moving current.
They also learn that pulling tow belts out is it causes chaos. As towing for any duration of time at all, it can be exhausting. So what you want to do is do your risk assessment to try to avoid ever getting yourself in a situation where you have to do that.
I'm with you.
That's a cool teaching idea. I'm totally stealing it.
Well,
with proper, copyright credit.
Yeah, whatever.
As long as people get better at this, I think that's the overall goal.
Well, that's what we say. It's all shareware, right? So
yep.
We get a good idea and try it out and morph it if it needs to be morphed, or if it doesn't work for students, and then give credit where credit is due.
So, like, one of the things that we've started doing, and I'm just cutting right in, we've started getting students, once they kind of got the handle of it and they're a little superstar, is doing rescues blindfolded.
And that's excellent.
It freaks people out. Like, that's like skirt to skirt, like in the sense they roll, wet exit, self-rescue, pump, the whole show blindfolded. It's pretty, it's great.
We're going to steal that one.
Yeah,
thank you.
Try it out. Because what it ends up doing is it really slows down the whole process, because they've got to think, okay, where is the paddle float, or where do I put my feet and weight shift and all that type of stuff. And I toss them out, and there's always big platter eyes. Oh, my goodness. The blindfolds. Terrified.
Yeah.
Works out good.
Yeah, and I guess you could also do it where you just use eye contact and you duct tape their mouths closed.
Oh, yeah, I do that with my kids.
A ball gag? Yeah, I can see where this is going. This is a different style of kayaking out in the San Juan Islands, I guess, but in Toronto. So that brings me to another question that I had for you, Sean and Leon, both. How do you... And I think you touched upon it, but how do you take in this information that you have, that you get from, obviously you see a wide variety of paddlers come out to visit you. It's you're really in a destination spot, in the sense that people don't drive by and go, yeah, I'd like to try that sea kayaking thing. People come out from all over the country to see you guys, and I'm sure they bring their basket of skills that they have. What do you do when you get some of these ideas to really test them out, to see if they're going to work, if you're going to steal them, if you're not going to steal them, if you're going to debunk them? What do you do?
Well, yeah, you kind of said it. One, we...
Good, then we're done.
Sean and I always say we learn more. At the end of the year, we've learned more from our students than we've given any student, for sure, with all the information they bring out. But we, like that towing scenario, that we set up with the rescue under tow, if moving out to the end of the boat is a viable way of rescuing somebody, then it should work under tow as well, because sometimes we do rescues under tows, anchor tows and things like that. So we just put things to the test. We set up scenarios with students actively doing things, and then see what works, what doesn't, see, what kind of equipment works, how fast it works, things like that, or certain techniques that work in different areas. And we just, over the years, seeing people try things in different environments teaches a lot. Plus, we travel a lot to go see other people and work with other coaches, and definitely higher level coaches, so that we're trying to stay current in the game as much as possible. And if we just, if it looks like a good idea, we steal it and we try it and we put it to the test, I guess. Even our, the name Body Boat Blade, we stole from the BCU. That's not original. We trademarked it and now we're making a small fortune off of it.
Your students will never, a mentor of ours said this to us, your students will never blame you or be upset if you're trying new things on them. So to keep it fresh, and just like Leon said, to keep it current, I think it's great to try these things out and bring them in when we can.
Right. One of the things that I really appreciate about you guys, and I do this quite a bit, as you well know, I have this thought process when I teach, which is never ask your students to do what you're not prepared to do yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
I think that's a real important side of the teaching that a lot of people miss out on. They sit back in their velvet thrones and their kayaks and they ask students to do all kinds of crazy stuff and they're not willing to get their feet or their butt wet. So I think that's a real important part of it as well.
Absolutely.
So
we have, unfortunately, our time is very limited with the Body Boat Blade Brigade, but you have something coming up, or you had something that you just recently did, and it's going to be a continuation, and so hit us with this.
So you're talking about the Jellyfish Award.
Oh, you know I am.
All right, so I don't know, way back in 1997, I attempted to go around Vancouver Island 700-mile trip. And I ended up doing 700 miles in 28 days. And people thought that was a record to beat, go around Vancouver Island faster than that. And so several people have broken that record. But I did that trip in that time because it's all the time I could get off work without getting fired.
Okay.
So last year, and Shauna didn't do it with me, and we've always wanted to go back and do that trip together. So this last summer, we took 44 days off of work and went around Vancouver Island slowly to set a new record and then to challenge other people to now break this record, which is 44 days, obviously.
But
so they
break
gotta go,
it the other way, yeah. Going slower.
Yeah, they have to go longer. And if they do that, they can win like a Warner paddle and a bunch of other kit and stuff we're going to put together.
And we've got two people, young folks here at the Y Camp. They work there. They're guides at the Y Camp, and they're heading off in July, we believe, to attempt it in 45 days.
Wow.
Now, I paddled an event, Victoria Harbor, right, 5 years ago. So
yeah,
have they got to beat my record? Because I've been working on the island for 5 years.
So you have to do it start to finish. And we want to say from – so when we did it, we loaded our kayaks in our shop, walked them the mile to the beach and North Beach, put in there, went around, put them on wheelies again and walked them back to the shop. Yeah, you got to start at our place. Not necessarily. We
could negotiate the start place. You know, if they're going to start from Port Hardy or something, that would probably be all right. But we've got to be able to document the trip somehow.
But it's got to be continuous.
And it's
got to
be
like,
continuous.
You can't go home for 6 years and come back and do it.
When children go to college and come back and do it, you know.
Look, if Freya can take 6 months off and then go back and paddle around, yeah.
Freya could probably do it 2 days, Kelly. Yeah. So
what's that?
Freya would probably beat Joe Oblenis's 14-day extravaganza, so I don't think we could slow that woman down.
No, she.
Right.
So.
But these two folks, Jenna and Austin, we'll wish them well.
Awesome. And so they're going to go for the 45-day mark, and then progressively, as people do it slower and slower.
Exactly.
We will always offer the Jellyfish Award.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
That is a wonderful idea, and it's, I'm all for taking a little extra time when you're paddling to see the sights. Because so often, you go out there and you have a float plan, and the only time you ever get to take a break is when you're weathered in, which is no fun to look around. So, this is a fantastic idea.
Yeah.
We hope so. We'll let you know how it goes.
It's such a beautiful island. It's just not, I mean, go around Manhattan fast. Apologies to people from New York, but Vancouver is not the island to go around fast.
No, you want to go around Manhattan fast because you will get killed by a bear.
Yeah.
And that is not a slur. I mean, a real life you know, ferry boat with passengers. They will kill.
And they have teeth painted on them. We've been in that harbor.
Oh yeah,
really?
I was telling David this earlier. One of the scariest paddles I ever did was with Bill Lozano. I was coming back from a coach three, and I said, "Oh no, you guys stay here. I got to get back to the Statue of Liberty. I'll just go myself." I am from Detroit. I have seen some scary stuff in my day, and it was utterly. It was a horror show out there.
Yeah.
So, but back to Vancouver, not a horror show.
No.
No, it's a wonderful place. And 45 days, so Austin and...
Jenna,
good luck to you. And it's just about time we have to wrap up with Shauna and Leon at Body Boat Blade. David, do you have anything final to say to these lovely people?
Oh, it's fantastic. I'm still grinding through my head this whole towing under rescues thing. Like, you know, I'm going to... I already got that planned out for another course in a couple of weeks. I'm definitely using it.
I'm going to see David in, a week and a half now, and I'm sure he and I will be out playing in Toronto using this tow. So the web address is bodyboatblade.com. That's Shauna Franklin and Leon Somay. No change in last name. They've been out there for a while, so go visit them. And any other cheap plugs you want to give while you're here?
Well, we're going to be teaching at the Wawa, at the Gales Kayak Symposium in Wawa, Ontario, and we're very excited about that. That's coming up in October.
I'm so excited for you. We're making the drive up.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. I'm intending on coming up there as well, so we will have a meeting of the mind. That'll be cool.
Yep.
We're originally Midwest paddlers. I learned on Lake Superior, and so did Shauna.
So it's nice to be going home, so to speak.
Shauna and Leon, it's always... wonderful to have a chat with you, and I'm glad we had a chance to get this interview. I know you're busy people, so thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
And there we go. That was the interview that we pre-recorded. That was not live.
That was great. You did a great job.
I loved your questions about the rescuing.
It totally blew me away.
We're gonna have to try that. Speaking of which, we're gonna see each other in 2 days.
Yep.
3 days.
Yep.
Something like that. By the time you guys listen to this, we will have already seen each other and had a man embrace.
Yep. I'm excited about it. MEC Toronto Paddle Fest.
I thought you were talking about the man embrace.
Oh, no, I'm not excited about that.
I am.
Okay.
Yeah. But, so MEC Paddle Fest is coming up. But the event we really want to talk about is the Door County Sea Kayak Symposium.
Yeah, tell me about it. I've never been to it.
Oh, it's a final event. So it happens in Door County, Wisconsin. And Door County, Wisconsin is, if you look at the map, you can see that Wisconsin is on the western border, borders to the west on Lake Michigan. And there's this little spit of land that goes up. And it actually looks like a naturally forming peninsula that if you follow the trail, you're only about 30 miles at the very tip, 30 miles from a peninsula in the upper peninsula of Michigan. That's a lot of peninsulas.
Really?
That's a bevy of peninsula, a cornucopia of peninsulas, not to be confused with Cornucopia, Wisconsin, not where Door County is. But the symposium is the brainchild of the Rutabaga folks in Madison, Wisconsin. The Midwest has always been very prolific in its kayak symposium, to use the plural there. And so they wanted to start something where they could offer this to their customer base, and their focus is on getting new paddlers into the sport. So they have a wide range of instructional programs, and literally you can buy your boat the day before and go up there and learn a ton and have a good time. So, Darren Bush, the owner of Rutabaga, is always harping on the fact that he doesn't want gurus up there. He doesn't want kayak coaches who say, look at me, I'm the greatest thing ever. Learn from me, be my dark mentor. It's just regular people doing regular kayaky stuff.
How long has it been going on?
You know, I think... if I'm not mistaken, this is year 8, but I could be wrong. I've been to all of them, and, you know, sometime after 3, I just put it on my schedule every year and don't even worry about it. So I think this is the 8th annual, but I could be way wrong on that.
Okay.
It could be 9, it could be 7. Who knows?
That sounds great.
But, it's a lot of fun, and, a lot of the cool thing is a lot of the coaches do this whole sort of circuit almost where they'll go and they'll teach at Door County and they'll come up to the Grand Marais Symposium, which is the weekend – preceding that and come up and teach there. And we get a different clientele. We even get some people who will do both symposia, which is really, really cool. So they make like sort of a 2-week vacation out of going to these symposia, and they enjoy themselves at both spots. They can do some paddling in Green Bay. They can do some paddling in Lake Michigan, and then they come up to Lake Superior and do that. So, yeah, it's fantastic. I think they roughly have about 140, 150 participants.
It's a pretty decent turnout.
Yeah, yeah, and it's an interesting little spot. So it's right on a semi-protected bay, although I've yet to be there when the bay was actually protected. It seems like they bring in the wind that comes straight down the pipe every time. But they have a myriad of trips to go around various places. And, yeah, so, I mean, it's a good social event, but it's a good learning event. And if you guys have an opportunity to go to that one, by all means do it. It's a lot of fun.
And what are the dates?
Yes, it is. I know it ends on the 15th, so it's got to start the 13th of July.
Okay.
Run to the 15th, which, you know, is my birthday. That's the only reason why I remember that. So I'll be there, and I'll be going out there bringing some P&H boats, including the Aries, so you can go out and try it and see if David's gushing is just him sucking my butt, or if he really believes that. So
I wouldn't tell it if I didn't believe it.
Exactly. Well, you certainly don't want the moniker of sucking Kelly's butt now, do you? So, yeah, Door County Symposium, you can look it up at, I think, paddlers.net.
Okay.
Or paddlers.com? Paddlers.com. Go just do the Google search on the Rutabaga paddling stuff, and they'll be able to sort you out. So, yeah, I believe on their Facebook page, my son is a threat. If you don't sign up soon, my son will come and get you. He's all dressed in NRS gear. So,
like ninja?
It's adorable. Yeah, he's sort of like a paddling ninja. It's quite good.
That sounds awesome.
So, yeah. So, Door County Symposium, like 13th, 12th. Something like that all the way. Come early. Yeah. So there you go. That's our event of the week right there.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of time. And we have blathered on for roughly an hour or so. I think we're going to check out. David, do you have anything else you want to say?
No. I was pretty excited about digging up this news. And we'll skip the point of contention for this time. And that will really be pent up for the next round. And I'll just come out like a tiger.
Just fighting. So that wraps us up for another edition of Kayak Mainline. Does that feel good to you, David?
Love it.
As always, my lovely co-host, David Johnston from Canada, thank you for doing this with me tonight.
Yeah, thanks so much. And this is Kelly Blades from the US of A.